The fifth case today, which is Jeremo versus Winnebago County.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Brainwald on behalf of the plaintiff, John Germano, individually and as class representative of a certified class. The plaintiffs are claiming in this case that they've been deprived of property rights created by Chapter 215, ILCS, Section 5/367H, by several actions of the Winnebago County Board. Two of those rights are, one, the right to participate in the Winnebago County self-funded health care plan at a premium cost equal to the premium cost charged for the same coverage under the plan for active deputies. The second violation is the right of Winnebago County retired deputies at the age of 65 or older to enroll in the self-funded plan in light of the allowance activities of deputies 65 or older to participate in the self-funded plan. The plaintiffs are claiming that they were deprived of those rights without due process of law because they were given no opportunity to object to have a pre-deprivation hearing. That is the constitutional violation that is being claimed in this case.
Well, the state concedes that the county ordinance or whatever it is here is violates the law. So what good would it do to have a lot of proceedings? It's already conceded.
That was the comment that the trial court made. And I think that the Supreme Court in Zinnerman answered that question because Judge Reinhardt had made the very same comment. No process afforded plaintiff would have been sufficient to establish defendant could charge plaintiff rates different than those charged non-retired employees, he said. And the court in Zinnerman said, procedural due process rules are meant to protect persons not from the deprivation, but from the mistaken or unjustified deprivation of life, liberty, or property. And then in footnote 11, the court, quoting from Carey versus Pippis, 435 U.S. 247 at 259, said this: the court in Carey versus Pippis explained that a deprivation of procedural due process is actionable under 1983 without regard to whether the deprivation would have taken place even in the presence of proper procedural safeguards. So it's the deprivation of the right to a hearing that's critical, not whether or not the county could have changed its decision or decided that, no, it's improper for us to do so. The point is, we were never even permitted an opportunity to present a statement to the county or to a fact finder or to a hearing examiner or anyone saying, look it, this is improper. You are violating rights guaranteed these people by the state statute, by the continuance privilege statute.
Why can't you go into state court and make that claim? I don't see what prevents you from doing that.
As the court said in Monroe versus Pope, the fact that there may be a state court remedy for the violation of the right, the property right, does not relieve the state agency of liability for violation of the constitutional right, the due process right. And the Supreme Court in Pope versus Monroe clearly said to the proposition that that you have to go through, but no, you don't. And that was, again, reflected in Zinnerman, where the court said that you only are concerned with state remedies where you have an exception to the procedural due process requirements, where the court said, citing from Zinnerman at 128, quoting Logan versus Zinnerman Brush Company, where the necessity of quick action by the state or the impracticality of providing any deprivation process may permit a post-deprivation remedy, where the potential length or severity of the deprivation does not indicate a likelihood of serious loss. Again, so here there is that likelihood. Again, here there is that action by the state causing a significant property loss. But not only is there that, but there is the added violation of the constitutional right to due process, which 1983 is designed and intended to protect. The prime issue, I believe, in this case, at least as reflected by the position being taken by the defendant and by the position being taken by the trial court, was whether or not the failure to provide an opportunity to the plaintiff and other class members prior to the board's action in January of 2000 in resetting the way that these determined premiums, and prior to the action in December of 2000 where it said, no, you cannot be enrolled in the self-funded health care plan if you're 65 or older, without giving the plaintiff and the class members an opportunity for hearing before the deprivation of that property right. Does that action, or those two actions by the county board, constitute random and unauthorized actions by the county board, such as to create an exception, a parat exception, to the rule enunciated that the basic premise of the right to procedural due process under the 14th Amendment is the right to be heard prior to the deprivation of the property right?
Certainly unauthorized, isn't it, if it's illegal?
But if we review the decisions of the court, the term unauthorization does not refer to the violation of the right. The term authorization is the body that is the decision maker that is making the decision authorized to do so. I think I pointed out this in my brief, but as this court has noted, the principle of Pratt is that unauthorized acts of subordinate state officials are what's the exception. An act through a decision made at the policymaking level of state or local government is not the principle of the rule in Pratt versus Taylor. As this court said, including Justice Kane in Hamlin versus Vonberg, I believe, that the state procedures allow, if the state procedures allow unfettered discretion, which the county certainly had, the abuse of that description is predictable, authorized, and preventable.
The county doesn't have unfettered discretion to violate state law.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The county did not have unfettered discretion to violate state law.
No, the county had unfettered discretion to determine what benefits that they were going to negotiate with the deputies that were actively employed, and thus determine what benefits the retired deputies had a right to. It's that, certainly, no political body, no agency has a right to violate a property right, regardless. But they have a right to take the action for which they did, i.e. the setting of premiums, i.e. the determination of who can participate in the self-funded health care plan. I see that my time is up. I want to save some time for rebuttal.
A little time for rebuttal, though.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Charles Proak. I'm here on behalf of the defendant, Appalachia County of Winnebago. The county has conceded that as to the two deprivations that the plaintiff has complained of, one, charging the retired employees more for insurance than it charges for the active employees, and separating out the over 65 retired deputies from its health care plan and not separating out the active over 65 employees. It's conceded that this, with respect to the over 65 deputies that are retired, that it violated the provisions of Section 367H of the Illinois Insurance Code. As far as the cost goes, that's still an open question. But that's beside the point, what brings us before this court, and that is, did the county, well, the county had no authority under the plaintiff's theory to do either of those things. And if it had no authority to do that, then what was the purpose of having a pre-deprivation hearing? A pre-deprivation hearing assumes that the action that's going to be taken by the state agent, in this case the County of Winnebago, could be taken. And the purpose of the hearing is to determine whether or not the action that is taken lawfully. In this particular instance, the county had no authority to take that action under the plaintiff's theory. With respect to the over 65 employees, the county has admitted that. Consequently, the acts of the county board in making this decision were random and unauthorized, and a pre-deprivation hearing was not required. That was the finding of Judge Reinhart in granting the defendant's motions for summary judgment.
They were unauthorized. Why were they random? That's an odd adjective to apply to this kind of thing.
I think random, if you look at it from the point of view of the state legislature, it's the state legislature that determined that it was in the state's best interest that its deputy sheriffs continue to have health insurance or the opportunity to have health insurance once they're retired on the same terms that the active deputy sheriffs have. They didn't provide it in that particular law a provision for not providing the deputy sheriffs with that opportunity to elect. And in that sense, it's random. They expected the municipalities, county being one of them, as defined under the pension code, to follow through with what the General Assembly dictated it to do. In this particular instance, the County of Winnebago, pursuant to the theory of the plaintiffs, did not. And in that sense, that would be a random act, an act that's not anticipated by the General Assembly when it mandated that the County of Winnebago, as other counties and municipalities in the state, were to provide the insurance to these retired employees, and that wasn't done. It's having a hearing to take an action that the plaintiff says you can't take is not only just a waste of time, but if you can't actually follow through on it, then what would be the purpose of having the hearing? In the cases that have been under the random and authorized action, the Parrott case, the Pratt case, that one was an officer who negligently destroyed somebody's property. You can't have a hearing to stop somebody from doing something negligently. The Hudson case, the officer intentionally destroyed a prisoner's property. Again, you can't have a hearing to stop somebody from doing something intentionally to destroy somebody's property. He's going to do that. In this particular instance, the County of Winnebago intentionally did not follow, according to the plaintiff's theory of the case, did not follow the provisions of Section 367H of the Illinois Insurance Code, and consequently deprived the deputies of the right to continuing health insurance.
How long was it before the county conceded that they acted improperly?
As far as the over 65 employees, it was during the course of the during the filing of the motions for summary judgment. There were cross motions for summary judgment. In our response to the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment and in our motion for summary judgment, that concession was made. There was no way that the county could possibly have defended its action with respect to that. The law is pretty clear. You have to have that in your policy that you're going to differentiate between your Social Security eligible employees.
What was the lapse time from the time that the policy was instituted, the county policy was instituted, until this session?
Before the concession was approximately, that policy was implemented in 2001. We filed motions for summary judgment in this year, 2004. So it would have been the 3 year, 3 years would have passed. And that's the other issue. I think this case should have been in state court. If it had been in state court, these issues would have been addressed and resolved long ago. But we've been plodding through, trying to resolve these issues in federal court. Now we still haven't had those issues resolved, and I think that's the reason why this particular case, because it was clearly a violation of state law. That's what's alleged. That's what the plaintiff is saying the county did not follow state law, and that's where we should have been in the first place. And I believe that Judge Reinhart was correct in granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment.
Has the county done anything about this yet? Have they corrected the...
Unfortunately, no, Your Honor, they have not. And I don't think it's really the place to get into that, but sometimes they don't always follow the advice of their lawyers. With that, I would conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you a minute, counsel.
Thank you, and that's probably all I need. Again, I'd like to quote, when counsel argues, what is the purpose of such a hearing? The purpose of a procedural due process hearing was stated by our Supreme Court in Zimmerman versus Birch. Procedural due process rules are meant to protect persons, not from the deprivation, but from the mistaken or unjustified deprivation of the life, liberty, or property. Give us a chance to tell them, hey, you're going to make a mistake, so that they don't make that mistake. As far as what is unauthorized, I'd like to quote from DeBasso versus Novello. The argument is unpersuasive because defendants misconstrue the meaning of unauthorized, as that term is used in Pratt and Hudson. In Zinnerman, the Supreme Court clarified the meaning of unauthorized, explaining that where a state delegates to the defendants, situation here, the power and authority to effect the very deprivation complained of, and also delegates to them the concomitant duty to initiate the procedural safeguards set by state law to guard against unlawful deprivations, abuse of that authority is not considered random and unauthorized, as that phrase is used in part in Pratt versus Hudson, and then again in Zimmerman versus Birch.
Your time has expired, counsel.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and we move to the final case today.